This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who aspire to be. If you're a real estate, mortgage, or financial professional, this is the place for you. We'll explore innovative investment analysis, sales, marketing, and income-generating strategies for the most historically proven wealth creator, income property. Learn from the experts as they show you how to build a better business and a better life.
It is my pleasure to welcome Mike Simonson back to the show. He is always just a wealth of information. You know, I'm constantly quoting him. He does a great job at Altos Research in really helping people understand the market, where we've been, where we are, and most importantly, where we're going. Mike, welcome back. How are you?
Thanks, Jason. Nice to be here.
It's good to have you. So give us your overall macro view, and then we're going to dive into some charts and data and some principles that I think will help people understand how to look at the market, even if they're watching this video 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years into the future, right?
Yeah. You know, here we are at the end of 2022, and the biggest trend recently has been a real surge in mortgage interest rates.
Yeah.
And we could see an immediate impact on home buyer demand. And really we could see an inflection point in the market during July and August of this year. Mortgage rates had spiked up in the first half of the year, and then they kind of eased back down into the fives, the 5% range, 5.5, 5. And inventory had peaked, and people were buying some homes, and they were it had significantly slower than the pandemic boom. It was starting to look, you know, like soft landing, like everything was going to just kind of keep working along. In the moment that mortgage rates jumped from in the fives to 6 and to 7, we could see an instantaneous inflection point in the market in a few measures. Like we could see, because buyers stopped, inventory started growing again. And, you know, this is early September. Now we're here, it's late October, inventory is still growing, and it'll be, you know, normally inventory falls a lot over the holidays, Thanksgiving and Christmas, and to the, before the New Year's resets. And so it'll be really fascinating to see what happens this year, you know, in this space where mortgage rates have really jumped up. As we look forward to 2023, it seems to me like that 5.5% may be a threshold for consumers. If we see rates drift back under 5.5%, my suspicion is that we're going to have a fairly reasonable market, housing market next year. People will buy.
When you say reasonable, you mean reasonably to the seller's market side of the equation?
Yeah. In other words, there will be buyers buying.
Right.
There will be sellers, if they want to sell a house, will be able to find buyers. You know, inventory will not grow from where it is. And there'll be a sort of a, some of the bubbliest markets will have price corrections, but in general, we'd probably have a reasonable floor on that, because people are buying enough at that point. But what we noticed when rates jumped above 5.5 to 6, to 6.5 and 7, that really put a damper on. And in my view, I always say, I don't have any ability to forecast interest rates. And so, you know, I didn't see 7% mortgage rates anywhere in this year. And so next year, like that will be that 5.5 looks like a real threshold. Above that is going to be likely going to be a really significant slower housing market.
Yeah. So what's really interesting, Mike, and, you know, I don't think I've ever heard you kind of allude to this point, but, and we'll talk about it when you show the inventory chart in a little broader way. But what's really interesting now is that if people reject rates above 5.5% or 6%, for example, which you seem to be saying, right, then that means that there's a whole slew of would-be sellers that won't be selling. Because 25% of the country has a mortgage sub 3%. 40% of the country has no mortgage. right? So, and then 25% is below 3%. So who is going to trade in that 3% mortgage for a 5.5% or 6% mortgage? Like, the move up market just diminishes, you know? And I don't know if that's ever happened before. I mean, I've been doing this for decades. And this is what I say, the Fed, with those artificially low rates during the COVID era, put a poison pill into the market. These people now have 28 years left on those artificially low mortgages. And I think they are going to hold on to those mortgages come hell or high water. You know, if they have to beg, borrow, and steal, they are going to keep that mortgage, which means they have to keep the house, right? The funny dichotomy that I want to jump in when we look at your inventory charts, which are great, by the way, is new home versus resale home. Because the builders don't have that mentality at all. But the current owners that have resale homes that might otherwise sell them totally have that mentality. This is an interesting dichotomy. I don't think it's ever happened, certainly not in my career.
Yeah. So, you know, like in my 30 years of my career, you know, mortgage rates have been generally falling for 30 years.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? One of the things that'll happen is that slowly, you know, people have to buy homes, people have a second kid, people yeah. move across the country, like those things happen. They yeah. have to sell and they have to buy.
But I think the pressures, the inclination is going to be to remodel, to add a second story, to add another room, or to, and if they do relinquish the house, they're more likely to keep it as a rental property
yes.
and to let it go. You know,
I think all of those are true. Yeah. And with work from home,
yeah,
I'm less likely to have to move across the country
exactly.
for the new job. I think all of those dynamics are absolutely keeping a lid on inventory for a long time.
Yeah. So inventory is going to be constricted for a long time, folks. I want to make sure you hear what Mike says there. And I've been saying the same thing. There's just, this is a poison pill. The Fed hurt the housing market in terms of, you know, entry-level housing and, you know, home buyers being able to buy, because now they've given an incentive for people not to sell.
Yeah. And Jason, it's not just the Fed. It's all of our policy in this country, all yeah. our tax policy, all our legal policy, all of it is designed to help the person who already owns the house. You know, we go into pandemic and it's mortgage forbearance. It is yeah. foreclosure, moratorium, like all of the things like tax benefit, tax laws. You're in California, yeah. we have Prop 13. Like yeah. these are, everything is designed to help the person who already owns the house.
Right.
And as a result, we then don't have to sell the house. Like it makes it a better deal to already own it. And therefore it makes it harder for others to buy.
And extrapolate that into the overall societal impact. And it means we create more of this winner take all society, and we create a further concentration of wealth. By the way, I no longer live in California. I haven't for years. I used to. I moved out 11 years ago. I live in Florida now. But everything you said means further concentration of wealth and more of a winner take all society, which is not good for society overall. People have to get in the gate and get their chance. And you have to have a big middle class if you want stability.
Yeah, we have lots of, like, there's a lot of reasons we do that. There's you know, the American dream, you know, home ownership thing. And so it's really easy to pass legislation that encourages people to be in homes. And, you know, if there's a crisis, to help them stay in their homes and, you know, all of the, like that and intuitively it, like at the surface, it makes sense. But one of the things it does is it makes, you know, the homes more expensive. You know, the fact that we treat homes as investments means that, like, we have you know, so much of America has most of their wealth in the value of their home. And, like, as a result, it's, you know, you want to keep that home. And so all of those things have made inventory fall each year for a bunch of years as we've taken more resale homes and put them into rental properties. It got really exacerbated during the pandemic and then came out of it a little bit this year. But what happens is if we have several years of higher rates, maybe in the 5, 6, 7s, that range, one of the things that will happen is it will be slightly less efficient to hold a home as a rental property. It'll be less profitable. Therefore, when I move, I will sell it And so that will, it will naturally help inventory climb over the next few years. I'll have fewer that stay in rental properties, but I'll still have people like, they'll still going to have to move, right? And they will want to move. And so we'll have general, like each year we'll have fewer and fewer people locked into the ultra low rates, and that will allow some inventory to build back up into the market.
Yeah,
there isn't anything.
And what's interesting is there's a flip side to all of this discussion, because the worse the housing affordability and the more people want to hang on to properties, more and more upward pressure on rents, right? That all causes more and more upward pressure on rents. And I know you don't profile rents or talk about rents, or yeah, I don't think you follow them at all, but those factors need to be understood. For
yeah. And actually we do follow rents.
Yeah, we do.
Okay. And one of the interesting things is one of the rationales for, you know, home prices have been climbing and staying elevated for several years. And one of the arguments, the reasons for that is that rents have been climbing too. And so now my cost, my mortgage costs are way down, but my income potential is climbing and way up. And so in the next year, as we're looking and, you know, wondering, what if we go into big recession? What, you know, like these kind of factors that could impact the market. If rents start falling, does that mean that some investors now have to sell their properties? And does that bring more inventory to the market finally?
Right.
And we can see some indication of rents starting to tick down. They're still really significantly higher than they were even a couple of years ago, but we can see some indication of them starting to tick down.
Yeah. And well, there's a cessation in increases also, because they've increased so much. And again, this really goes back to the saying, all real estate is local, because that is much more true in the cyclical markets than the linear markets that are the lower cost entry level type markets, where, you know, we still see rents increasing. But Mike, I can't wait to jump into some of your great charts. So share your screen and let's talk about
sure,
some specific data, but that was a good overview. Thank you.
All right. Well, this is the available inventory of single family homes in the US. Currently this week is October 18th, 2022. And there are 566,000 single family homes available unsold on the market. You know, we've been talking about how inventory falls year over year and has been falling year over year as rates have been falling also. And each year it's a really good deal when rates are low and rents are high to own more investment properties. And so each of the resale, you can see each annual hump, it starts to be a little bit lower. In 2018, rates rose, mortgage rates rose from like 3.9 to 4.9% on the 30 year. And we could see right in the middle here that the 2019, after a year that started with more inventory than 2018. And that was the result of having, you know, 100 basis points higher in mortgage rate. We're now way higher. And so we'll have a little bit of down and up. And so like, we'll see where this year goes, how much rates call down at the far right of the chart here. I mentioned like there is an inflection point in like a threshold for consumers, which seems to be at about 5.5% on the 30 year. And you can see right here, there's this little dip in the first week of September. Inventory had been falling, and then rates jumped from 5 to 6 to 7%, and all of a sudden inventory started climbing again. That was, you can see how buyers cooled way off; they stopped buying things, and so inventory started piling up there. And so now it's mid October, and inventory is rising. Normally, you can see I've highlighted like 2019. Normally, by this time of year, next week, and all the way through the end of the year, inventory would be declining each week.
So this begs the question, and you know, I always try to ask myself with anything in life, Mike, what is the chart not telling us, or what is Mike not saying here, right? And I don't know if you keep data on this, but how much of this inventory change, which by the way, inventory overall historically is still very low, right? We have to keep that in perspective. But how much do you attribute to buyers not buying versus sellers putting more properties on the market, thinking that, hey, this is my last chance to sell at a good price. You know, maybe they're trying to time the market too, right? You know, which side of that equation? I like to use the metaphor of like a sink, right? And I've got a graphic that I use all the time for this. So you've got the faucet, right? And that represents new inventory coming in. You've got maybe some water in the sink that represents existing inventory. And then the drain is the buyers buying properties, absorbing inventory. So when you look at it that way, what do you see happening here?
Well, in this moment, that drain is plugged up and the buyers aren't buying. So the buyers aren't taking them off the market. We could see it in a couple places. In this part of the curve—
But the faucet's not on very much either, though.
The faucet's not, but the faucet's only a drip, right?
Yeah. Oh, so the faucet is just dripping, which means new inventory is just trickling in. But the buyers have, you know, and what we're finding with our investors, it seems like it's almost 50-50. Like you could just draw a line down the center of our client base. And some of them are just, they're just investing. They just keep going, you know, because, hey, what do investors do? They invest. And others are kind of sitting on the sidelines trying to time the market, thinking, oh, it's going to go down, you know, it's going to soften up, I'm going to get a good deal, which I kind of think they're going to be disappointed, but tell us your opinion.
Yeah. And so, you know, I kind of in the same boat, like, but I've seen folks, you know, one of the things that is, you know, interesting with investors and actually much of America right now is we still have a lot of cash. We still like have, you know, post pandemic, a lot of money still sloshing around the system. Yeah. So there are investors, and I know people who are buying houses in Florida right now and Texas. And like, I have friends, and like, it's really fascinating to kind of, what do they have in common, you know, and what are they looking for? And have they backed off waiting for another bargain? Like it's really fascinating watching that, but I kind of sense the same thing. Like it also depends on where they're focused and what type of investing they're doing, like buying a second home that they're going to use some, those are less likely to hold off. So they're going to, it's a second home, it's an investment home, it's going to get some rental income, but I also want to go skiing this winter. They're like, we're going to do it now and use it. Or, you know, we're buying the place in Florida that we also want to use. And so, you know, we have cash. We're not particularly worried about the mortgage rates. And those kind of mix is really what I've seen happening. But back to your original point. Yeah. So we can see right now that it's a buyers that have stopped cold, especially over that 5.5% rate. And the way we can see it is that new listing volume is significantly lower. It's about 20% lower each week than normally this time of year. So 20% fewer new listings hitting the market any given week.
That's significant. I mean,
it is significant.
So new listings coming on the market, that's down by 20%.
Yes, over where it typically would be in middle of October.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
But what's interesting is even though new listing volume is 20% lower, inventory is still ticking up. Right. So some of those are building up on the market. The other thing is we can see earlier this year, as the market was cooling from ultra hot down into, you know, starting to cool off in April, May, June, sellers who were considering selling sometime this summer, they rushed to market in April, May, June. We pulled that supply forward and we could really see after the 4th of July weekend, that's when the new listing volume turned off and literally dropped 4th of July weekend and did not recover. And it, you know, like dropped down like this. And in June, we'd had more new listing volume than we had in recent years. So like we could see that supply had been pulled forward. So sellers trying to time the market absolutely pulled supply onto the market in May and June, but then post July 4th, it's not sellers trying to like coming on to try to time the market. So the sellers at this point are looking out and saying, I don't have to sell. It's not a good time to sell. I'm going to wait.
And then they're under no pressure to sell.
There are no pressure to sell. And so we can really see it in this moment as a buyer's condition. Now it'll be interesting to see when we get into January of 2023, because, you know, the market really resets. And now it's like, I'm thinking about this year, and now my kids are graduating high school, and like the event, we start planning a full new year after that. And so, you know, we will see how steep the inventory climb is in January, February, March, and that'll be really telling.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. All right. So there's more to it than inventory though, right, Mike?
That's right.
All right. So
prices. We can look at home prices. And what's interesting on home prices, the median price of a single family home in the US is $430,000 right now. And in the fourth quarter, home prices typically fall with inventory. Each year they fall. And this is the median asking price of homes, all the single family homes in the US. So if you walk into the market today, right in the middle is 430 grand. Half of them are cheaper than that. And so what we can expect is that we'll end the year closer to 400,000. And that will still be a 10% gain over 2021. Like we have a 10% home price gain this year. And that's the dark red line here. And you can see the annual curve. The next big thing to watch will be how steep this annual curve climbs up in January, turns that corner in January. And so it's likely to be a much shallower curve than you've seen in recent years in the price chart. And we can see that because right now we know that the buyers are holding back. We know that at 7%, the mortgage rates are more expensive. We know that properties that are on the market have taken price cuts. So we know all of these elements. And so we can see that homes that are on the market now, there's no upward pressure on pricing. It's going to come down a little bit. And then in January, what happens in January is you get the quality new stock is on the market. And, you know, things get priced better. You have more searcher, like more buyers. So right now we have end of the season as well as, you know, the cycle of rates and things driving the mix.
Mike, let's talk about where does this pricing data come from? These are just listings, right? This is That's the right. listed price of just every home in the MLS, right?
Yeah. So homes get listed for sale and we watch them all. We track every home for sale in the country every week. And what this teaches us is that when a house is on the market now, let's say it gets an offer in November, it closes in December or January, traditional housing data, you're starting to hear about that.
Yeah, it's 60 to 90 days for at least. Yeah.
And so, but we can see right now what's happening. We can see not only where their asking price is now, we can see them cut prices. We could see the light colored line here are the newly listed cohort. So the ones that came to market this week. And that one has all kinds of signal in it because those sellers and those listing agents, they know exactly where the demand is out there. They know they have to discount a little more. Mm-hmm. And so they'll do that to get any action. And so these are leading indicators for transactions that will happen in the future.
The interesting thing about this is that, number one, I'm going to say that it mostly doesn't include new homes. I mean, some of them are in the MLS for sure, but it's definitely all the resale homes. But the other thing that's interesting about it is because you don't do seasonal adjustments, which I'm not necessarily a fan of, but we have to make the adjustment in our mind, right? If you're not doing it in the data, which
that's
you're
right.
not. Okay. So is it possible that, you know, this time of year, larger family style homes that are more expensive don't come on the market as much because the school year and, you know, not moving the kids right now. Whereas in the springtime and into the summer, they do come on the market because it's a more normal time to move the kids around with school considerations and so forth. Thoughts?
Yes. And that is exactly what you see. And so that's why you see the second week of January, you start to see prices start climbing each year. All right. The new quality stock, like you've got a good home that you want to sell, you start, like if you're thinking about it now, you're planning on selling it in the spring. And so that stock changes. And so you get a very clear seasonal trend each year. In the last couple of years, the trend then typically falls off in the fall. But during the pandemic, it didn't, prices didn't fall off in the fall because buyers kept buying all the way into November and December. They didn't mind. So we had less of a seasonal fall off. So if you were doing a seasonal adjustment, things were like unseasonably strong. And so you could see that like here in 2020, you can see how this $350,000 mark on the was where we were in the fall of 2020. And then prices actually didn't decline because people were still buying in November and December. And then they did a little bit over the holidays before they resumed. Right now is much more each week prices are taken down because both of the season and because of the market conditions. And so you absolutely see that better homes, higher quality, you know, those transactions happen in the spring.
The more expensive homes. So that'll skew the data a bit. All right. Got it. Okay. Let's go to your inventory projections if we can.
Yeah. Let's go to inventory projection is here. And in this chart, we have each bar is a week. And when it's above the line, inventory grew that week. When it's below the line, inventory shrank that week. And so each color is a year. So you can see how things, inventory grows in the spring and then falls in the second half of the year. The dark blue on the right, the far right of the chart is that's this year. And then the brown part is how we forecast the changes in inventory through the end of the year, each week. And so what we can see right now is we have 566,000 single family homes on the market. And based on the fact that nobody lists a home over Thanksgiving and nobody lists it over Christmas, like those inventory falls during those weeks. And so we're expecting to end 2022 at about 490,000 single family homes. And 490,000 is, you know, normally back 2016, 17, like it's a million homes would be on the market.
So it's less than half of inventory back in 2016.
Yep.
Yeah.
Less than half.
This is the thing. These homeowners are not distressed. They have high credit scores. They have cheap mortgages. 40% of them don't have any mortgage. If you want to have a market crash, you got to have distressed homeowners. That's what I always say, that are going to just dump their properties. That's just not coming.
And there's inventory,
in inventory is less than half of where it needs to be. But that inventory, if we had a million homes for sale versus 490,000 at the end of the year, right, that would only be considered, quote unquote, normal. That wouldn't be a bad market.
Okay? That's exactly right. That would get us back to normal. And, you know, there are no distressed sellers. Yeah. There are no.
Well, there's like three.
Yeah, that's right.
There's people in foreclosure in the United States. Just kidding.
Yeah. But there are some markets, the ones that were the most bubbly during the pandemic, Austin, Boise, Phoenix, Salt Lake City, where some of those, especially certain parts of those towns, you can see inventory has climbed back to normal. Like what it would have been 5 or 6 years ago. Like you could see inventory has climbed there. And these were markets where when rates are 3%, moving from California,
they were nuts.
They're nuts. Yeah. And you could buy, you know, I could buy a place in Boise and it almost didn't matter what I paid because, you know, at 3%, I bid $100,000 or $200,000 over asking and my mortgage payment doesn't change that much. But then at 7%, now I'm sensitive to every marginal dollar that I have to spend on that mortgage. And so that migration pattern stopped really abruptly. Yeah. And so in those markets, price reductions are way up. Inventory has climbed way up. And you can see they're much more seasonally up and down than the country as a whole.
Yeah.
We can see in like the Northeast, I was looking at like suburban New York City and New Jersey this week. And inventory is still basically at pandemic lows. And that's because it wasn't restricted by it wasn't people running into the market and buying up, you know, everything from California. Then when that trend stopped, it didn't affect them at all. So a lot of the country is still really in very low inventory.
Wow. Yeah. This is an unusual situation, isn't it?
Yeah. And what's going to be really fascinating in the next few weeks, and the thing I'm going to be watching for in each week until the end of the year, are the brown down lines here at the end of the chart. And we forecast based on, you know, previous years, and you know that by middle of November, nobody's listing homes, so inventory falls. And so those are weekly forecasts. But if buyers have stopped so cold that inventory is climbing in November, like that will be an unusual scenario. It'll be the first time I've seen it, you know, in over a decade, like ever, maybe.
But even if that happens, how much could it climb? Right?
It won't climb much.
It would be
a bearish signal for pricing for next year.
Right, right. But it would have to double to more than double, really, to just get to normal.
Normal levels. That's right.
Yeah, right.
You know, if you're a buyer right now, my take is, you know, you'll probably have more selection. Like we'll probably have more inventory. You'll probably have more selection, but it's unlikely that you're going to have a glut of homes to choose from.
Right.
You know, you already have more selection than you did earlier in the year, which is good. And you'll likely have more next year. Like the inventory will likely be up next year, year over year. But I don't see any signs in the data that would imply we have a lot of homes for sale.
Right. Yeah. I agree with you. It's just very scarce. It's a weird situation. And that's going to keep the upward price pressure going, even with affordability lower. So Mike, when you ask yourself, something has to give, what is going to give? And here's what I say gives: standard of living. It's just no longer the same buyer. You know, for the would-be buyer that was going to buy that $400,000 house that has now been priced out due to higher mortgage rates is just going to have to buy a $300,000 house. And everybody just moves down the socioeconomic ladder. That's what happens. It's funny how humans are, and I've always noticed this, that they have this sort of thing in their mind that like the avatar of the buyer for this segment of housing is the same person. And it's not. It moves, right? Mm-hmm. As that affordability declines, people just have to accept less. And that's where the capitulation happens. And it's sad. I mean, we got really spoiled the last 2 years, but I liken it to this. Mostly people move from high-priced markets to low-priced markets, right? But occasionally they go the other way. And I did this example recently, and I looked up a $1 million house in Jacksonville, Florida. And you could buy a palace, right? It was 5,000 square feet. It was gorgeous, marble floors. I mean, the house was just beautiful, okay, on a big piece of land, a beautiful location, et cetera. And then I looked up $1 million in New York City, and you got a 653 square foot condo, you know, with big HOA dues, by the way, not to mention that. So that's what it's like. If you're moving from Jacksonville to New York City, you're just going to accept a lot less. That's the reality of the situation. And that's what happens as affordability is constricted either by higher prices or higher mortgage rates.
For sure. I think one of the fascinating challenges that we'll face if we end up in a world where mortgage rates stay in the sevens or maybe even higher, who knows, is that it's been really hard to build new construction at that entry-level price.
Yeah.
And like within an inflationary world, it's even harder to do. And so the new supply is definitely not coming in the entry-level pricing. Right. And so what does that imply for where those homeowners go, or those people, where those buyers go?
They just stay in the rental pool, or they just adjust their expectations downward and they buy something less.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. People do what they can and they get by with what they have. And you know, when you look at markets around the world, I mean, Americans have always been so spoiled because we get so much more for our money here. If you were buying a house in Europe, or I mean, even in, and this will sound like a crazy example, Sri Lanka, okay? Housing is really expensive in the cities of Sri Lanka. Like you get nothing for your money, and the people are already poor there, right? It just, the standard of living is what gives. That's where the concession comes from. People just have to accept less. That's the reality of it. Yeah.
It's a new era.
Yeah, it really is. Okay. What else do you want our listeners to know before we wrap it up?
Let's see. You know, one of the things I was watching is, so this is inventory in San Francisco. And the thing that I'm watching for is, you know, this is how reliably inventory falls in November and December. And you can see the little dots are each year this week of October each year. And so you can see inventory just craters in November and December each year. Even in 2020, when San Francisco had a lot of out-migration during the pandemic, people moving out of town. And so there were a lot of new listings during 2020. But even that year, inventory fell in November and December. And so then the question is nationally, what happens this year in November and December? Like, how shut off are buyers? How stopped is that drain so that even a trickle of new listings starts to fill the sink up? It's something that I'm really going to be keeping my eye on over the next few weeks. Yeah. And then finally, let's look at price reductions.
Okay.
So the percentage of homes on the market that have taken a price cut is a leading indicator of where transaction prices are going to be in the future. And we're at 42% of the country right now. The active market has taken a price cut from that original list price. You could see that it's higher than it, you know, that normal range normally might be 35%. So it's higher than normal, but it's not really catastrophically bad. Yeah. You know, like during the bubble bursting, that's like 50%. And in some markets now, Austin, Boise, Phoenix, they're in the 60s. And like you can really tell where they had overbidding, they had bidding wars, they had inbound migration, and those stopped very dramatically.
Yeah.
And all of those homes had to cut their price to get back to a normal level.
Here's my comment on this, Mike. Having been in the traditional resale business for just over 20 years, that was the first half of my career. What I've always noticed when the market shifts is that the seller's expectations are always way up here and the reality of the market is below them. Whereas before, when the market was hot, the market they're coming off of, expectations and market were about the same, right? The sellers could overprice, what is overpriced? I don't know what that means, right? But, you know, they could price it higher than their neighbor's house that just sold and they would get it many times with multiple offers. But it's sticky on the way down because the psychology of the seller adjusts very slowly. They capitulate very, very slowly. And what they end up doing is as the market softens, they end up chasing the market and their houses become stale. The listings become stale. Everybody always wants the new thing, even if it's not necessarily the best thing. It's just the new thing. So we are always attracted to the new thing. So they get into this sort of cycle of doom, these sellers. And I think this chart explains that. That's why you see the price reductions, because the sellers' expectations are still in line with a market that had 3.5%, 4%, 4.5% interest rates, right?
That's right.
And that market is no longer there and they really capitulate slowly. And that's why housing prices really aren't very volatile compared to stocks or precious metals or certainly cryptocurrencies because of that expectation level of sellers, right? Very sticky.
Yeah. And they're also significantly less easy to trade than those things. So
you have
a much slower adjustment on those. What we can see here, and like, if you are a seller right now, or if you're an agent advising sellers, the message here is, you know, do you want to be ahead of this or behind this curve?
You want to be ahead of it.
You want to be ahead of this curve, right? So know that, and we can look at the price reductions in your local market, and, you know, normally it might be 35%. And if you're at 45, 50, 60%, like that is a significant signal to you that you want to price that property best now when you list it so that you're not stuck in that curve of increasing price reductions, like with more and more people price reductions. So that's a real signal about where homes are going to transact in the future. And so like you can use this as a seller to say, aha, my strategy here is to price a discount a little bit when we go out so that we get the attention immediately rather than getting stale, as you say, and now, you know, losing that momentum. As a buyer in a market where the price reduction is really high, that gives you opportunity to look for bargains. It also means you don't have to hurry and rush into a deal. You can, you know, look for the ones that you find that are the right property at the right price. You know, it's a signal about how much control you have as a buyer.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's so much more pleasurable being a buyer in a normal market, even though we only have half the inventory or less even than a normal market. I mean, depends what you think is normal, but go back to 2016, for example. But you just have more selection, you have more choice, and you're not under so much pressure. You know, you just don't have that FOMO sense all the time. So that is much more pleasant to operate in.
Yeah, significantly healthier market.
Yeah,
absolutely. Than it was, you know, beginning of the year, January, February this year was just, it was not healthy. And well, yeah. It wasn't good for any participants.
Yep. Yep. As Logan, our mutual friend, likes to say, you know, and his articles in Housing Wire, he says, savagely unhealthy housing market. You know,
yeah.
And that describes it. That's what we've been in. We've been in a savagely unhealthy housing market. Now it's getting better, right? But most people don't think it's getting better because the rates are high. But,
yeah.
You know, personally, as a middleman, I like this kind of market much better. It's much easier to operate, right? That other market, it's just impossible to operate in the crazy market we've had over the past couple of years. So,
yeah, I think so. You know, when you look at this point on this chart, when price reductions are normally a third of the market takes a price cut and only 15% is taking a cut now because there's overbidding and there's bidding war, then that's when all kinds of games get played. And, you know, there's like, oh, it's an exclusive listing. We're not actually going to show it to you. Like all of these things that are really unhealthy for the market start happening. All kinds of speculation, fraud things start bubbling up when all of that gets in there. And so, you know, getting to a market that has more supply, less voracious demand, like those are all balancing things. And so the, you know, the question for next year is, do we get a big swing the other way, a big shock the other direction? Or is it, you know, do we end up in a market where we have buyers and they're buying and it's more expensive than it was, but, you know, but it's possible, or are they shut off entirely? And like, do we have a whole new unhealthiness swing the other direction? Right. Financial markets, so many things have had the bullwhip effect during the last few years, you know, swinging from real expensive to, you know, crashing down, and it's happening in like shipping costs right now. And, you know, chip availability. I saw something about natural gas in Spain. They have too much of it now. Like, you know,
it's like that bullwhip effect. It is amazing how messed up the supply chain is still. I can't believe we're still having these problems. Try to buy a car today. It's impossible. It's just, yeah it's get parts for a car, any everything. It's just still such a mess. I can't believe it. So, it's always great talking with you. If there's anything else you want to say, question I didn't ask you, please fire away. But, you know, it's great to
always
have you.
A pleasure, Jason.
Yeah. All right. That's Mike Simonson with Altos Research, everybody. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.